today as we come to the table.
Now, I know for a pastor, there's a lot more accountability, but the same way with us as dads and moms, and especially dads, I'm going to focus on this. We need to be living out in front of our kids. Remember, not perfection, honesty, seeking God, really getting in the Word, really praying, really trying to do the right thing. And they recognize that. They can look past your failures when they see your sincerity. They really can. And so he says, we conducted ourselves devoutly. We lived it out in front of you so you could catch it, not just be taught it. You would catch it. Next, he says, we were justly. That means justly with fellow believers. And what he means was is that we conducted ourselves in a just way, one with another within the church. We did the right thing.
Almost all of us will have some kind of leadership role in our lives. It may be as a parent or a friend, but unless you live as a hermit, you'll face that responsibility. As a follower of Christ, it brings a whole new weight to that role. Not only do you need to be concerned with the well-being of those you lead, but you need to be mindful of how your behavior reflects Jesus. Well, thanks for staying with us today as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Pastor Mark Kirk of Calvary Knoxville. As Pastor Mark will clarify in today's message, you can't expect perfection of yourself or any leader, but you should expect authenticity and honesty. When you do stumble, don't be afraid to admit it and seek help. That could be one of the greatest lessons you teach. Now, let's join Pastor Mark in the book of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 as he continues his message, The Traits of a Godly Leader.
Although I could say, hey, I need some financial help, I'm going to continue to work and provide for myself so that nobody can accuse me and so that I won't be a burden to you guys. And what I love about Paul is Paul didn't just teach this stuff. Paul lived it out in action. He lived it out. And what do I mean by that? Paul didn't say, hey, you know, this is what I tell other guys they need to do. Paul did it himself. And they knew what Paul's life was like. They watched him live it. I've learned over the years that true ministry, or really maybe put it another way, being like Jesus is more caught than taught. It just is. You can go to all the school of ministry classes you want, all the seminary, all the Bible studies, and you're going to grow from those. God's going to minister to you. But you're going to catch it better when you see people living it than just being taught about it. And so our life matters. Our life matters here in the church. Our life matters outside of the church. Wherever we live our life, it matters how we're living because people are watching us. We're an example to others, and we need to make sure that we're living that proper example before them. You know, it's interesting. I never intended for my house to kind of be a hub for the college group and all these other people traveling in it all the time, but that's what it's become, and it's a huge blessing. I love it. I mean, we have it at any given time. We've got a house filled with a bunch of college students and things going on, activities, whatever. I never envisioned that happening, but it's like really, really exciting because it's fun to watch them and to be with them and to see their excitement and to be able to just kind of be with them, you know. There's such a life there. But I'll tell you something else. There's a reality is when you've got people that are in your house all the time, not all the time, but at a large amount of time, they tend to see who you really are at home, right? And so, you know, hopefully they don't see too much. You close the proper doors when you're going wherever, right? In your home, so to speak, which happened in the old building one time when it was the church at our house. But either way, sorry, giving you too much detail that you didn't need or ask for. But the bottom line is they see how you live your life. How do you conduct yourself? You know, what's your temper like? What's your personality like? And of course, when people are there, you're going to act a little bit different. You're not going to be totally free when people are there. But if people are there a lot, if people live around you and they see you, they should be able to see, you know what? You're not perfect, quite clearly. But you're trying to live for the Lord. And that's a good example. We need to be those that are the same way in our homes as we are at the church in the sense of living our lives in general as unto God. And Paul's going to get into that more in just a moment as he talks about the way they lived among them. But we need to make sure that we're not living two separate lives, one life one place and one life somewhere else. And Paul gets into that. Look at verse 10. He says this, for you are witnesses. You've seen it, how we lived. And God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe. Notice he says, our testimony speaks for itself. You watched us and how we lived. Again, without saying a word, you saw how we conducted ourselves. And again, I said, it's more caught than it is taught. I was very green. I wasn't, for whatever the reason, I was not really very equipped when it came to just the ways of the world and how to conduct yourself, you know, growing up. I did a lot of really crazy things and foolish things and embarrassing things that I'm not going to share with you right now. But I mean, I'll never forget one of them. I'll share the first time I ever was. I grew up in small towns. I'll never forget the first time I went to a place where they handed a check on a table and I didn't know what to do with it. They put the check on the table and I was like, why do you give us the check? Nobody, here's the funny thing, nobody else at the table knew either. I don't know. Why they give it to? I don't know. What do we do with that? I don't know. What do you think? And finally somebody said, I bet they want us to pay him. I was like, they want us to pay him. Now that happened after I signed it and handed it back to him. I didn't know what to do. I signed it and he gave it to him. He walked away all nervous and he walks back in a corner and a bunch of waiters all gathered going, is this somebody really famous, important? Why did he just sign this? You know, and he comes back to the table and goes, we're not accepting city ledger at this time. So I was like, oh, well, that's okay. We'll just pay them. You know, I'm admitting to you my ignorance in so many things. But I learned by watching others. It would have been good to have been with someone else that was there paying the bill to have seen that before I found myself in that place. And even in ministry, when I watch people, I didn't realize when you get up in front of people, you're aware of everything. Like here, my hands are here, I'm aware of them. I was never aware that my hands were just always here until you guys came in. And now my hands are with me everywhere I go, always at the end of my arm. Every time I look, there they are. And when I would sit, and you go, like, for example, you sit up front, and there's a funeral. And I would watch these guys. You don't realize, you don't know what to do with your hands. I was very socially awkward. And so I would watch these guys. Okay, how's he holding his hands during the funeral? Okay, what's he doing with his hands while he teaches? Well, how's he standing? Now, I've got very natural, I'm very comfortable on my skin, quite obviously. Nothing seems to bother me that way now. But you have no idea how little I knew and what I had to learn. And I still watch people today. I would not know how to conduct myself in a congressional type setting or if I was invited to the White House. I mean, I would just kind of sit there and not do anything until I watched everybody else do something because I don't know what to do. And I don't say that in any kind of proud way. I'm saying, how do I learn it? I've learned it by watching. What did that guy do? What did that guy do? I remember reading a story about somebody that had been at the White House eating with the president, and they were watching the president. They didn't know what to do either, and they were saying, what do I do? What do I do? And so the president took some of his coffee and poured it in a saucer, and so they took some of their coffee, and they poured it in a saucer, and then they sat there for a minute to see what the president would do, and the president reached down and put it on the floor and gave it to his dog. And they're going, well, I can't do that. So here they are at the table of the president of the United States. Everything's sitting there, and there's a saucer there with coffee. You're going, I thought we all did that. I mean, just what you do, you pour coffee, you know. The point is, and there is a point. Guys, it's caught. Watching how we live our lives. Our kids watch that, dads. Our kids watch that, moms. And they don't expect perfection. They know we're not perfect. But what they do expect is that we're trying. Notice Paul says here, we conducted ourselves in three different ways with you, devoutly, justly, and blamelessly. And notice number one, devoutly means devoutly with God. That is, we lived our life in front of you in such a way that you could see that it was real, okay? Me being at my home with people coming in and out all the time, it's hard to be fake. It's hard to be. Maybe you can to a certain degree, but you got to live life. And the same way with you, your kids watch you. Are you real? Are you the same dad and mom that you are at the church that you are at home? Listen, I'm a PK. Those of you that are PKs know what that means. Preacher's kid, right? And whenever you meet another preacher's kid, you're a PK, I'm a PK too. We have this kind of private talk or whatever, kind of a little, we do a thing, whatever. Anyway, but here's what I've seen. When it comes to PKs, the ones that end up walking good with God are those that had a dad that really lived it at home. I'll tell you what else I've seen. When there were pastors that did not live at home, what they were doing in the pulpit, those kids walked away and they rebelled. And I understand it. I understand. You know why? If it's not real to him, why should it be real to me? And they're in those developing years and they walk away. It's a dangerous thing. Now, I know for a pastor, there's a lot more accountability, but the same way with us as dads and moms, and especially dads, I'm going to focus on this, we need to be living out in front of our kids. Remember, not perfection, honesty, seeking God, really getting in the Word, really praying, really trying to do the right thing, and they recognize that. They can look past your failures when they see your sincerity. They really can. And so he says, we conducted ourselves devoutly. We lived it out in front of you so you could catch it, not just be taught it. You would catch it. Next, he says, we were justly. That means justly with fellow believers. And what he means was is that we conducted ourselves in a just way, one with another within the church. We did the right thing. If we did somebody wrong, we went to them and said, please forgive me. We humbled ourselves. We did whatever needed to be done. If we conducted business, we did it the right way, justly. What's another thing? The last thing he says, and this one applies to before the world, he says we did it blamelessly. Now what this means is it doesn't mean that you'll never be accused. Note this, you will be accused if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, because the Bible says that Satan himself accuses us day and night before the throne of heaven. So you're always being accused. Sometimes you know it, sometimes you don't know it. Sometimes it comes out through a person's mouth. Sometimes it simply comes in your mind as the enemy accuses you and maybe even points out something you're really doing wrong to make you feel guilty. And of course, when that happens, we need to use that to go to the Lord and ask forgiveness. But the reality is we're going to be accused. That's part of it. Here's the key. We need to live our life in such a way that it's blameless before the world so that when we are accused, it's unprovable. In other words, you may be accused, but nobody can back it up. Well, I think Pastor Mark, and there's nothing going on like that right now, so this is not some, I don't know why I have to say that every time, but there really isn't, but I do. But let's say that was happening. Maybe I didn't even know about it was happening. A lot of things you could probably accuse me of, you'd be right, because you see my flaws. But am I trying to live for God? That's the key. Am I getting it right when I find out it's wrong? Am I trying to be that example in front of the world around me? Are you trying to do that? That's what it means to be blameless. So when somebody accuses us, you can't be accused. Now, again, you can put boundaries up in your life to guard yourself on that. Put boundaries up. Whatever boundary you need, put that up in your life, guard yourself, and then nobody can ever accuse you of anything. You know, it's interesting. I brought this up in first service, and I've said it to you guys before. I hope this is not over belabored, but I just want to say it again because it really makes a point, and that is this. Listen, there's adultery in the world, and there's even adultery in the church. I've been a pastor now for 26, 27 years, I don't know, whatever it is. And over the years, I've seen a lot of sad things happen. But here's what I've realized. If you're never alone with somebody of the opposite sex, guess what can never happen? Isn't that simple? How simple is that? That is so easy. It's like, just never be alone with someone of the opposite sex without your wife or a friend, and there's no way you're ever going to fall in adultery. So, well, I'm not worried about it because I'm not tempted. Well, I'll put it this way. If you guard yourself in that way, not being legalistic, but if you guard yourself, then you never will be tempted. You won't have an opportunity. Now, again, this applies more to pastors than it does others because, again, pastors, this is one of the areas that pastors fall. They say, what are the areas that pastors fall? They fall in finances and in pride and with women. So Billy Graham used to always say, and if you look back at pastors that have fallen, that's the areas they fall in. So what do we do? At Calvary Chapel, we have an outside company that comes in and looks at our books. It's not just our board, you know, that looks at them and runs everything. We have an outside company that comes in every year, and we pay them to look at our books and say, does anything look weird? And they say, nope, you look great. All right, great. Well, then they charge us, and now our books are worse because of them. But either way, why? Because we may be accused one day. And if somebody accuses us, I want to say, you know what? See our accountants. Talk to them. And we have years of records, okay? And somebody says, you know, I think I saw Pastor Mark with women around town. Or well, who? Well, I don't know who, but I think it is. Well, anybody else other women? No. Why? Because he never does that. So if he's never doing that, you're not going to see that. Now, here's the thing to realize. When I say put boundaries up, whatever boundaries you need so that you can stay above reproach and unaccusable and this kind of thing, it doesn't mean that, you know, I tell the staffers, say, staff, don't be alone with anybody privately for an extended period of time of the opposite sex, okay? Now, I'm not radical about it. If I'm standing out in the hall and there's nobody around right now and a woman comes in the hall, you know, I don't throw holy water on her and start hissing, you know. Right? But if I see it's going to be a long, drawn-out conversation, I'll say something like, you know, why don't we step out front? I've had to do that before. You know, so let's go out front and talk out there on the patio where I know people are. Or let's go in here and I'll bring somebody in. We'll sit in the conference room. Why? Not because I'm tempted or I'm thinking about doing anything that I shouldn't do. But it's just a very, very simple principle. If you stay away from whatever areas, in all the areas where people fall, if you put boundaries up in those areas, it won't happen. You have to choose to make it happen. And if you choose to make it happen, you're going to make it happen. There's no way you can stop it. It's part of it. But if you set up the boundaries, you're going to be safe. So guard yourself. He says, we lived in such a way that we conducted ourselves blamelessly before you, and now we can't be accused. And he goes on, look at this, verse 11. He says, as you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you, as a father does his own children, that you would walk worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Now, as we already noted, Paul said he would treat them, or he treated them as a tender mother would in gentleness. Now he shifts gears. He says, I also dealt with you as a father. So now comes the firmer, tougher approach as well. And how did he do it? Not just in exhortation and comfort, but in encouragement and strength and giving them a charge for the ministry. That is, you need to be sharing the gospel. You need to go and share the kingdom with other people and you know, charge them as a father does his own children. It's interesting that he uses the word charge here. The word means it's a strong word that shows strength and conviction concerning the things of God. So even as we are to be tender and gentle like a mother, we need to show strong, sturdy conviction of the things of God. Strong and sturdy, steady, making a stand, you know, living as a man is supposed to live. Now, there has to be a balance, tenderness and strength combined, as Paul is sharing with them. But I think one of the biggest problems that we have in much of the church today, and really quite frankly in our society, is a lack of strong male leadership. Now, this is not a He-Man Woman Haters Club speech. Okay, I'm not saying that women can't be strong leaders. I'm saying, man, we need to be leaders. We're called to be leaders in our home. We're called to be leaders in the church. We're called to be leaders in the community. This is God's design. And so we need to step up to the plate and say, all right, God, how do I do that? And I believe that a lot of male leadership has been in decline in our society for quite some time. Rather than strong and bold male leadership, oftentimes we see weaker and weaker men. And I think maybe some people paint that as a picture of strength. You know, it's not a picture of strength. It's a picture of not being what God's called you to be. Now, you don't have to be macho, all right? I'm not talking about an attitude. You know, the macho thing. You know, I'm going around, I'm a fighter. I'm one of those. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. But just walking where God's called you to walk as a man. Making a stand where you need to make a stand in your own home. Making a stand where you need to make a stand in the church. Making a stand where you need to make a stand in society. It's just being what God has called us to be. And so, you know, you look all through Scripture, and I love looking at the men in the Bible because you see these men in the Scripture, and there's nothing wrong in somebody having a very soft side to them. David had a very soft side. You read the Psalms, and David would weep, and all these things that David had, very, very soft side to him. But at the same time, David was a truly man of God and a real man. You know, David did what needed to be done. He was a warrior when he needed to be a warrior. And so he had the proper balance that's supposed to be there. And so Paul says being strong and assertive when it comes to a father is a good thing. So men, don't be afraid to be men. Don't be afraid to be strong. Don't be afraid to be bold. Don't be afraid to be assertive, and especially when it comes to the gospel. You know, I haven't heard this for a long time, but I would hear people say, you know, men, we need to learn how to get in touch with our feminine side, right? My wife is my feminine side. She's my feminine side. I'm the masculine side. That's why God brought us together. I'm the man, she's the woman. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have a tender heart and I shouldn't be gentle with my kids and with you guys, but it also means that it's okay to be a man and to be what God's called us to be. And so, again, leaders of the flock and setting that example. Paul said, I was doing that here for you guys in Thessalonica, and we need to do that here in Knoxville as well. And so Paul goes on, he says, not only being as a father a charge to the children, he goes on next and he says, look at verse 12, that you would walk worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom of glory. What a statement, walking worthy of God. Guys, you know what? We're very close to the return of the Lord. I really believe we are very close. Now, think about this for a minute. Everybody talks about it. The Lord's coming back. We believe that. We don't know when it's going to be. We don't know the day or the hour. I do believe we've entered into what the Bible calls the time of sorrows that Jesus talked about in Matthew 24, verse 8. It talks about the birth pangs that always see happening. Again, we'll get in a little bit more detail about that next week. But the bottom line is that do you realize what's going to happen after the rapture? The rapture takes place. Then you have the great tribulation where God's going to try to save as many as he can right before he comes back. But here's the ultimate thing that we're very close to. And that is, he comes back to the earth and he establishes a kingdom with a real king sitting on a real throne. You ever thought that through? How many of you have served under a king in a real kingdom? I never have. I'll be watching a lot at that time too. Because I'll look like an idiot if I don't. I've never been under a king in the literal physical sense. I'm under one now spiritually, but I've never been under one physically. He's going to be sitting on a throne in Jerusalem. We're all going to be serving him as his subjects worldwide. The Bible says you will be kings and priests unto the Lord. What are we going to wear? What will the kingdom look like? What will the palace gatherings be like? What will the feast be like? What will it be like when the Lord sits and teaches us the Bible, which it says he will do? Our king. Can you imagine? I just can't even imagine. It is right around the corner. So you're in prep school. This is prep school this morning. What Paul is saying is, are you ready to be a subject in a real kingdom, worldwide, with a real king seated on a throne? Again, any protocols that we're supposed to follow, he will teach us. We will know it probably instantaneously. And certainly we're going to be again bowing before him. We understand all that as far as the worship and the praise. But right now, Paul is saying, start walking worthy now. You are now kings and priests. It's not just when he comes back and establishes his throne in Jerusalem and rules the world for 1,000 years. Right now, you're kings and priests unto God. Live like it. Walk worthy of it. There's nothing more disgraceful than a prince or a king who's living totally for themselves and in the world. There's historical records of that. You can find them. They're disgusting. It disgusts their kingdoms and disgusts those that know them. Why? Because it's not befitting character. It's not befitting behavior. There's behavior that's befitting of royalty. You are royalty. That's what the Bible says. And here's the really cool thing. Anybody that wants to be a part of the royal family, you're welcome. If you're here today and you're not a part of the royal family, all you have to do is believe that Jesus died for you on a cross. That his payment, his blood was spilled for you. You now are a member of the royal family and you're a king and a priest forever unto God. Wearing whatever you're going to wear and whatever's going to happen and what's going to be amazing. You know, I just can't wait to see you guys. I can't wait to see you guys. And I'll tell you what it does is, and I wish I could keep this mindset all the time. It doesn't always stay there. I get back in the flesh too easy. But if I could just picture you guys as kings and priests all the time, I'd know I'd treat you differently. Now, I probably wouldn't say, you know, your majesty and things like that. I think that's not, it's probably not appropriate. But you're a king. That's who you are. I'm not making it up. It's not religious fantasy land. You're really a king. For real. Or as some of my friends used to say, growing up, for reals. You're a king. You're a priest unto the Lord. Wow. And I know you. A lot of you. And everybody will say, well, I know. I met this person. I met that person. Right? Were they a king? Well, no. Well, I know lots of kings. Really? Yeah, I'll introduce them to you. Come to church Sunday. Because that's who you are. Now, walk worthy of it. You're royalty. Conduct yourself as royalty in privacy and in open. Because God's watching and the world's watching. Walk worthy of God, Paul said to them. And so, again, part of the kingdom. Why? Because we're a part of his kingdom and his glory. He ends there at that end of this verse. And, you know, again, showing the responsibility we have as to who we represent and who we're walking in this, you know, royalty with and for. All this is there. And God has given it to us. Let's walk worthy of it. Now, next week, as I said, we're going to be doing a special message. I think we need to kind of take a little bit of time to kind of talk about what's going on so that we know how to best love our neighbors and love our family and reach out to our community in love. And show that love in a very practical way, but also how we conduct ourselves and the way we move forward as believers. But as we finish today, looking at the traits of a godly leader, I want to encourage us as men to be men and step up to the plate in what God has called us to do. First of all, in our families, with our wives and children, and then secondly, in the church as well. Again, now's the time. You're on stage. Time is short. There's not a whole lot of time left to step up and do what a man's called to do. And again, or what a woman's called to do for that matter. But this is our focus as men today. We need strong male leadership in our churches. We need strong male leadership in our community. And we need strong male leadership in our nation. Again, this is not to the exclusion of strong female leaders. That's not what I'm saying. You guys are with me on this. This is our focus today as men. So we need to step up and be men. So I want to end today by praying that God will not only help all of us exhibit these godly traits that we've been looking at the last few weeks, but especially that we as men will step up to the plate and boldly answer the call that God has given us to be men of God. And again, for those of you who don't know the Lord, if you're not a part of the royal family yet, know this, it's open to everyone all over the world, no matter your background, no matter your country you come from or your history or whatever, nothing matters. You are welcome in the family of God. It's simply a matter of believing in Jesus and receiving.
The New Testament letters of 1st and 2nd Thessalonians are good reminders that people in the past had the same concerns as many might have today. There can be an uncertainty of what's to come, and when everyone starts to speculate, it gets tricky to discern what's true and what's not. If you're finding yourself becoming stagnant in your faith, this book is like drinking some fresh water, as it brings about the right perspective on Christ's return and what that means for those who are followers of Jesus. If you aren't familiar with this kind of faith and are wondering what it means to become a follower of Jesus, don't hesitate to ask us any questions. You can connect at thewaymedia.net by clicking on the Come to the Table section or give our church office a call at 865-609-1385. Again, that number is 865-609-1385. If you're in the Knoxville area, please come to get to know us at Calvary Knoxville. We meet every Sunday and we'd be excited to hear your story. Simply go to thewaymedia.net and find the Calvary Knoxville link to get service times and directions. If these teachings have been helpful for you and you'd like to hear more from this series and the letters to the Thessalonians, we encourage you to find them on thewaymedia.net. We'd be happy to have you join us for our next edition. Keep reading through God's Word until we again come to the table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.